It's easy for a church to forget what it's about. It's easy for a church to get distracted. It's easy for a church to get its priorities mixed up. It's easy for a church to start emphasizing the wrong things. Stephen Covey, maybe you're familiar with him. He's kind of the life coach, guru, business consultant, all-around wise guy. Not a Christian, but a very smart, wise man. He said something. Before I share the quote, I want you to realize that this could apply to us personally. It could apply to a family. It could apply to a business. But this morning, we're thinking about it as it relates to our church. Stephen Covey said, in a world in which it's easy to get distracted and easy to lose perspective and easy to get mixed up priorities, he said the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. You're like, well, of course. Who doesn't know that? Who doesn't keep the main thing the main thing? What kind of fool does that? London Transit Authority was having problems. You see, they were driving by bus stops. The bus drivers were going by bus stops where people were waiting at the bus stop in line to get on the bus, and the bus just whizzed by them. And people started complaining, and there was this little bit of an uproar. But the buses are cruising right past us, and we're standing there in line. And so there was kind of this hullabaloo, and the London Transit Authority had to issue a press release to explain the problem. And they said, we are finding it very difficult to maintain our schedules if we have to stop at every corner and pick up passengers. What? I thought you were a bus company. Isn't the main thing to pick up passengers? It's hard. We get mixed up priorities. We get distracted from the main thing, yeah? Each year, thousands of businesses start. Most of them, we already know, won't succeed. And business consultants will tell you it's because they forget what they're about. They forget their purpose. They get distracted by something else. And so in his book, Principle-Centered Leadership, Stephen Covey comes along and says to a business or says to a church, you've got to keep the main thing the main thing. So what it's saying is that it's possible for a church to be busy. And in the midst of all that busyness, to get distracted, to get distracted so that a new thing distracts you from the main thing, or a good thing distracts you from the best thing. So once a year, we spend time on a Sunday morning coming together and saying, okay, let's remind ourselves, because we know we're prone to get distracted, let's remind ourselves, what is the main thing here? What is it that we're about? What is it that we get excited about here? What is it that we cheer on when it happens? What is it that we pray for? What is it that we really want to see happen as a church? Once a year we do that, we call it Vision Sunday. This Sunday is Vision Sunday of this year, 2017. What is the main thing? Well, here's how we say it. The main thing here is to help more people believe that Jesus is more. The main thing, it's super simple. I mean, we should all be able to say it. Hey, wake me up at 3:00 in the morning and say, what is the crossing about? It's simple. We're helping more people believe that Jesus is more. So that means that if the building is in constant use, and it is, I assure you, week in and week out, there are people here at all times of the day, every day of the week. If we have great programs, and we do, you know that yourself. If more people come each Sunday, and that continues to happen, but if all those things happen, but more people aren't believing that Jesus is more, well, then we're like a bus company that doesn't have time to pick up passengers. We've lost track of what we're about. But when you say, when you say to help more people believe that Jesus is more, it kind of begs this question, more than what? Dave and I were eating lunch a couple weeks ago at Flat Branch with a couple guys that have become our friends over the last couple years, Lester and Carlos. They're both pastors of predominantly black churches in town. They are sharp guys. We've learned a lot from them and enjoy our relationship with them. Well, in the context of the lunch, I just said, hey guys, you know, if I were to sit around the dinner table or if I were to listen in on some of the conversations that the people in your church are having, what is it that's on their mind? And without much hesitation at all, maybe none, Lester said, not getting shot. I was like, what? And he goes, yeah, you know, a lot of people that go to our church, they live in dangerous neighborhoods or they live next to dangerous neighborhoods. And so while it's probably not like likely to happen, they're always a little bit cautious about a stray bullet or something that would tear apart their family. And then they returned the question back to us. What are people at the crossing talking about? And Dave said, rightly so, I think. He said, well, the crossing, as they already know, is a bigger church. And so it's hard to say to identify one thing that everybody's talking about. There are people of all different ages, different seasons in life, different economic backgrounds, different political backgrounds, different racial backgrounds. And so it's hard to say that this is the topic that the people at the crossing are talking about. But he said, if you could go just a little bit deeper, I think that what the people at the crossing are wrestling with are things like fear, anxiety, depression, loneliness, aimlessness. Those are the kinds of things that are happening underneath the surface in a large swath of the people who go to the crossing. And Lester says, is divorce a thing? And we're like, yeah, it's definitely a thing. In fact, it seems like lately we've noticed that social media pressures have put pressure, or social media has put pressure on marriages to live up, to be like this person, or to have a marriage like this couple. So yes, divorce is a thing. I spend enough time between my own kids and church and community with middle school and high school students to know that you might be surprised at how many are on anti-anxiety medication, antidepressants. And Lester and Carlos, they just kind of looked at us like, that doesn't make sense, except Lester said, you know, I drove through a drive-thru this morning for breakfast, and the girl working the drive-thru, he goes, I guess she's a high school student, I don't know. He said, but she was a pretty girl, but on her arm were just all these cuts. And they're like, yeah, cutting is a real thing. But it's not just like that somehow middle school and high school or college students or somebody else. I go, that is us. That is all of us. It's just that the people who are adults maybe mask it in a different way. They deal, they cope, they learn different coping mechanisms. Maybe it's alcohol, or maybe it's changing jobs, or maybe it's the getting the divorce, you know, changing spouses, or maybe it's shopping, or maybe it's busyness, or maybe it's, in a sense, medication. And please don't get me wrong, it's not like medication is somehow wrong, it's not at all. It's just that most people I know who are on it, which happens to be a very good thing for them, would look forward to a day when they don't need to be on it any longer. And so Lester looks and he says, what are they afraid of? What are they worried about? And you can understand where he's coming from, right? Because from his perspective, the way he's looking at this conversation, he's like, these people, they seem to have everything. What are they possibly unhappy about? A guy named Greg Easterbrook writes a book. Now, all I care about right now is the title of the book because he captures it. The title of the book is this, The Progress Paradox. The Progress Paradox, How When Life Gets Better, People Feel Worse. The Progress Paradox, life gets better while people feel worse. How did the wealthiest, how did the most technologically advanced, how did the most educated nation in history turn out to produce people who are so unhappy, so anxious, so fearful, so lonely, so lost, so medicated? When I was in high school, I used to be into Simon and Garfunkel. And there's the song Paul Simon wrote. It was on the Sounds of Silence CD. It's called Richard Corey. Here it is. They say that Richard Corey owns one half of this whole town with political connections to spread his wealth around. Born into society, a banker's only child, he had everything a man could want, power, grace, and style. But I work in this factory, and I curse the life I'm living, and I curse my poverty, and I wish that I could be, oh, I wish I could be, oh, I wish I could be Richard Corey. The papers print his picture almost everywhere he goes. Richard Corey at the opera, Richard Corey at a show. And the rumor of his parties and the orgies on his yacht, oh, he surely must be happy with everything he's got. But I work in his factory, and I curse the life I'm living, and I curse my poverty, and I wish I could be, oh, I wish I could be, oh, I wish I could be Richard Corey. He freely gave to charity. He had the common touch, and they were grateful for his patronage and thanked him very much. So my mind was filled with wonder when the evening headlines read, Richard Corey went home last night and put a bullet through his head. But I work in his factory, and I curse the life I'm living, and I curse my poverty, and I wish I could be, oh, I wish I could be, oh, I wish I could be Richard Corey. And I think even as a high school student, as a person who wasn't a Christian, wasn't interested in Christianity, there was this seed planted in my head by that song that showed me that there was real life and then there was image. Because in that song, this guy who works in a factory wants to be like Richard Corey because the image of Richard Corey is incredible, but inside there's a different story. None of us are our image. But neither are the people we live and work with. So they have an appearance, just like you and I do, of being one thing, but in reality it's something else. And then there's the unhappiness of it all that I knew even as a high school student, that Richard Corey had everything and he had nothing. The kind of great American psychologist, Lauren Slater, said this. She said, I ache for something I cannot name. I ache for something I cannot name. I could take that and put it on a banner. I ache for something I cannot name and put it over divorces and put it over job changes and put it over people moving from place to place and put it over the difficulties that come in our life. I ache for something I cannot name, kind of just pinpoints what each of us feels from time to time. And into that ache, we say this, Jesus is more. Here's how Jesus says it. John chapter 6, verse 35, Jesus declares, I am the bread of life, the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. See, what Jesus is saying here is that he is what our soul hungers for. He is what our soul thirsts for. That in this vast world with all kinds of activity and all kinds of promises and all kinds of things going on that we pursue and run after, hoping it'll make me happy, what Jesus says is that he is more. Or he says it this way to the woman at the well in John 4. Jesus answered, I love it the way he says it here, everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. Everyone who drinks this water, what's this water? This water is anything that we try to find life in other than Jesus. Because look what he says. Everyone who drinks this water will be different for all of us. what this water is. We all have our different thing that we're pursuing life in. Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again. It does not satisfy. But whoever drinks the water I give them will never thirst. So what Jesus is saying here is that he is more, that he quenches our soul. He is what our soul hungers and thirsts for. But it also means this. Here at the crossing, Jesus is all we got. You've got a job loss. You know what this little secret is? I can't help that much with it. I can't find you a job that you would enjoy doing and that would use your gifts and skills and education and pay you something that you'd like and have. I can't do it. You have marriage problems? Sure, there's advice and help and encouragement, but I can't fix it. You have an ache for something you cannot name? I can't solve that problem. I can't do it. But what I can do is this. I can show you Jesus. I can show you Jesus who will quench your thirst and satisfy your hunger. See, the thing here at the crossing is we don't want ever to say anyone, come to the crossing and the crossing will fix you. No. The crossing is not the hero of any story that's worth telling. No, the crossing is a sign. The sign saying the hero is over here. The crossing is a guide taking you and me and all of us to Jesus. He's the one that can satisfy. He's the one that meets every need. Jesus is the one that never fails. Jesus is the one that never leaves you. He is the hero of the story. So all we have is Jesus. But the good thing is that he is all we need. Because Jesus is more. He's more than anything this world offers. And Jesus is better. He's better than anything your eyes have seen, anything your ears have heard about, anything your heart has imagined. Jesus is better. So this guy named Will, and he's friends with Daniel, who's on our music team today up here a lot, and he shows up the other night and says, you know, says to one of our guys on staff, Tim, he says, I've just been watching Daniel, and I'm watching his life and getting married and doing all these things with his job, and this Daniel on the right and Will on the left. By the way, every story I now share, I have permission, all right? So I'm not sharing anything that's going to embarrass or shock anyone. Okay, there, got that. That's my disclaimer. And so Will says, I'm just here because Daniel said to come to church with him. Now, I don't know Will. I don't know him well enough to be able to say what it is he's seen about Daniel or what he thinks our church will do. But here's what he wants. He may not be able to say this. He probably wouldn't say this. He's probably listening to it right now. And he goes, well, that's not how I'd put it. But it's how I'd put it, is that underneath that is Jesus. That what he really wants, whether he knows it or not, what you and I really want, whether we know it or not, what we really need is Jesus. Because Jesus is more. Let's watch this video of how Jesus is more played out in Adam and Katie Crutchfield's life.
If you asked anyone who Adam Crutchfield was, they would say, man, that guy can party, and he's fun to be around when you're partying. That's who I was. That's who I was always going to be. I remember sitting in my basement one time being like, I guess this is what life is. I will go to work, and then I will drink. And that's what it was, and it was extremely depressing. I really hated myself because I would go back to drinking knowing that it's going to cause a problem. I knew it, and I couldn't stop.
To be an alcoholic doesn't mean you have to wake up every day and drink. He was a binge drinker. It would be this vicious cycle of him feeling sick the next day and anxious and depressed, and then he'd do it again the next night, and we would fight. After, you know, a year of it, I was like, I don't think he can control himself. It scared me to think that I might have to parent alone.
There were some guys I worked with. I saw things in them that I was like, if I could just kind of harness that a little bit, it'd probably make my life a little bit better. In asking that question, you know, I got the answer where they found their self-worth and identity in Christ. And it kind of blew me away. It wasn't the answer I was expecting. You know, that had a big, big impact on kind of opening my eyes to, you know, the possibility of life isn't all about drinking. Started going to the Crossing after some of the conversations that I had had with the guys I'd worked with. And I said, maybe I'll check this out and see what the Crossing has to hold, and maybe Jesus is there. Once we got involved in the couple small group, I really think it helped bring my wife and I closer together in our walk.
People from the Crossing were pouring into both of us individually. A lot of the people he works with, I also have relationships with their spouses, and it just seemed like the right people were talking to us at the exact right time that we needed them.
What freed me from needing other people's acceptance all the time was definitely having a relationship with God and knowing that there was more than just this life. The person I thought I was with alcohol is actually the person who I am sober and with Christ.
God was working in my life. God was changing my heart. And He was making me different, making me a new man.
Before I knew it, we had come up on a year of not drinking. And after that, I just decided that it just wasn't something that I needed in my life.
Seeing Adam make such positive changes in his life, it just trickled down into every aspect of our life. He is the man that I always knew he was.
Being there to take care of my family has just been extremely rewarding.
If I could tell myself 4 or 5 years ago that it is possible to get through these dark patches, that it is possible to grow in a closer relationship with Christ and your life can change, I don't know if I would have believed it, but it's true.
I'm honored to be baptized into God's family and to let the world know that I am His. Thank you.
I hope you hear it. Jesus is more. He's more than alcohol. He is more than the approval of people in my life. A couple years ago, about 2.5 years ago, a couple walks into my office. I knew him a little bit, but not much, just a little bit. Plop down on the couch in my office and say that they've been married for 13 years, have a couple young kids. And that the husband had just told the wife that the entire time of their relationship, the entire 13 years of this marriage, he was a serial adulterer. Serial adultery for 13 years without a pause. You just tell. I mean, her face is just in shock. She doesn't even know how to process the information, and he doesn't know what to do. He just finally grew tired of it and told her. So I pray with him, and I talk to him about Jesus, and I try to give him some hope, but I'm in way over my head. I pass them off to our counseling team. And they write to me every so often, not too often, but every so often, they'll send me an update of where they are in life. Here's one about 20 months into it. Here's what the woman said to me. This one, obviously anonymous. She said this. She said, "The first year of recovery was extremely painful for both of us. He was in the depths of his addiction emotionally. I had nothing to give me to help with my pain and brokenness. And that's where the Crossing Counseling Ministry and Women's Support Group have been instrumental in my healing. I started attending the women's support group, and I do not think I would have made it through this first year without the support of those women. The community God provided me has been one of the biggest blessings in my life. I'm so grateful the Crossing has a group like this. I firmly believe God intended to heal me at the Crossing, and it's one of the few churches that has that kind of ministry." This is what the husband, the guy, sends me another update, a little bit different timing, but another one. He said, "I was just going through the motions," he means in his faith, I led a small group that we hosted. I put effort into it. I sat every Sunday in the church hearing a message and singing the songs. But truthfully, I doubted my salvation. I knew what I'd done. I knew what I was planning on doing. I decided not to stop. I had rationalized it. I said, I'm a guy. It's what we do. I'm not hurting anyone. As long as it's a secret, it'll be okay. It would hurt my wife if I told her. I won't call that girl again. I won't drink again. He said, I was living a double life. I figured God couldn't forgive me and I couldn't forgive myself. But on that day when he left my office, he got connected to a men's support group of people who are struggling with addictions. And he talked about how much those men made a difference in his life. And then he said, I met Pat. Pat is one of our counselors here. Here's what he says. Pat has been, she has been instrumental in my recovery so far. She is an addiction expert and spoke truth to me. She pushed on me and gave me guidance. She's an expert guided by her faith. I cannot imagine my recovery without her, and am convinced I would not be this far along without her. Jesus is more, and Jesus is better, and Jesus heals, and Jesus never fails. About several months ago, it was back at the beginning of last school year, so it was almost exactly a year ago, we decided as a student ministry we were going to start writing devotionals that would go to middle school and high school students. They could sign up for them and push it straight to their phone, and when they woke up in the morning, they could get a verse and they could get a little devotional they could read to help them walk with God. So this is a picture of some middle school girls at camp this year, and the one on the left is Noelle. And Noelle's parents realized that when she rode the bus to school, she had to be on it for a whole hour. That she got picked up at 7:20, got dropped off, or at 6:20, got dropped off at 7:20 for school. And they're like, okay, this is silly. We just got to rearrange our schedule and take, you don't need to spend an hour on the bus. And Noelle said, no, I don't want to do that. I want to ride that bus. And they're like, well, why? She goes, well, that's when the devotional comes up on my phone. And I get to read my devotional. So I want to ride the bus because that helps me walk with God. That's a sixth grader. Jesus is more. Jesus is better. So I always expect one day to stand up here and say, well, the crossing's not growing anymore. I mean, I really do expect it. After 17 years of growth every single year, just reality eventually, I think, will catch up. I mean, Columbia is only so big a town. There are only so many people, I guess, spiritually interested in a church like The Crossing. I figure it's going to stop. Now, people who are committed to church come to church less often than they ever have in the past, not just here, but across the nation. But again, this year, we grew another 150 people. Hey, I don't know if that sounds like a lot to you or not, but think of it this way. We grew another small church. On top of what God had already brought, he brought another small church, kind of people that would make up another small church to come here to join us and join what he's doing here. See, when you get that Jesus is more, it shifts. It shifts something in your heart away from yourself and toward others. I was going through Luke this summer, and look what it says in Luke 4. Jesus left the synagogue and went to the home of Simon. Now, Simon's mother-in-law was suffering from a high fever, and they asked Jesus to help her. So he bent over and rebuked the fever, and it left her. She got up at once and began to wait on them. Now, besides thinking that's what every mother-in-law would be great at, right? No, you didn't think that. Just think here for a second. What happened? Jesus touches this woman's life, and her first response, having met Jesus, having been transformed by Jesus, having been healed by Jesus, is one to serve others. Because that's what happens when we see that Jesus is more in our life. It puts this shift away from self and toward others. And so that's what's happened here. You guys finding Jesus to be your satisfaction have gone out and served the world. Maybe this is a good way to say, a good time to say that this year, 2017 at The Crossing, you guys, we as a church will give over $1 million away in our community and to missions all around the world. So I could tell you 300 stories right now. I am only going to tell you a couple that have to do with how the crossing is seen in the community. So this guy's a teacher at Gentry, a great guy, kind of a man's man kind of guy. I like him a lot, but he's not a Christian, doesn't think of himself a Christian, doesn't go here. But he's interacted with what we do in town enough that he was teaching kind of religious, historical, the history of religious revival in the United States. And he was talking about how what happens when revival would happen back in the 1800s. And he said, this guy didn't go here. He said, it'd be like what the crossing does. He said, that's what those people do. They serve. They help people. I would love it if every church were like that church. Or it's like the city councilman who came to the big Ben Watson interview here. If you weren't here, you can see it on our website. It was a fantastic night where we talked about race and the gospel in some serious and challenging ways. And the city councilman who sent an email saying, thank you to the crossing for doing things like this, for having conversations like this. Or it's the guy, Joel Sager, who owns Sager Broadus and the art gallery downtown, who posts on his Instagram page about how he was very reluctant to have any kind of partnership with the church. It's obviously not his background, what he's comfortable with, but on his Instagram in a public way, he's saying the crossing has been the best people to deal with, the best people to work with. See, what happens is that when you live for others, when you find Jesus is more and serve and sacrifice, what happens is that people begin to notice. People who are far from God begin to check out Jesus. They want to know about, like Will, Daniel's friend, they want to know what is it that's making the difference over there. My wife's in spinning. About a few months ago, she's in a spinning deal, a class, and they were talking in the class about how this event was going to be held at the Crossing Gym, some event, and she asked the woman, are you going to go to that? And she said, no, that church, I've never been there. It's huge. It's big. It's parking lot. I would never go there. And she has no idea who my wife is, right? And Christine's like, what's going to happen? And the woman says, but that church puts their money where their mouth is. I was just like, what do you mean? She goes, my dad's in, this is a woman talking, I still don't know her name. She goes, my dad's in a nursing home. And do you know those people go and visit that nursing home? They just go visit people. My dad loves those people. He's there and all those others who are in the nursing home, many of whom are alone, that those people at the crossing, they just go take care of them. I spoke with mine and Christine's friend Jill this week. She had been spending time at the nursing home holding the hand of two different people and encouraging their family as those two older people died. She just needed somebody to process. What's it like to sit and hold hands with people in the nursing home you've gotten to know over the years? You don't know them, but you know them, and then they die as you hold their hand. I don't know. I've never done it, but I'll tell you this. That's the work of Jesus. That's what happens when you believe that Jesus is more. But it's not just here in town, it's all over the world. Partnerships in Japan and Jamaica, Kenya, Guatemala, Honduras, Hungary, and all different parts of the world. Here's a picture of Ron and Sally Widman, just ordinary people you'd ever meet. You knew them maybe because Sally was a school teacher forever in Columbia, one of the best teachers in Columbia had. And then there's Ron, who was on the network, on local news for years and years, and also taught some in the public schools as well. They get the bug to go to Guatemala. They go on this mission trip and they're like, I think God could use us down there. So they go down there and begin to minister to the people of Guatemala, sent by You, the Crossing. And they recently gave us this video to share with you.
Until a few days before we flew back to the States, Sally and I thought we knew exactly what we wanted to say to our friends and family back home. And then we took a walk the other day, a quiet stroll down the streets of a town named San Andres to the town cemetery. We took it with a man named Daryl Fulp. God has called him to literally serve the least of these.
So many children in Guatemala who are born with special needs are allowed to die. They're allowed to starve to death, or even at times they're strangled or suffocated. So part of our role is to help this country and the world see how God sees children with special needs.
It's a reality we've lived with for the past 5 years in Guatemala. We thought we understood it, and then we took a walk the other day, back to a place called Hogar de la Esperanza, home of hope. There we found people who aren't willing to live with the cruelty that special needs children endure in this country.
Is it hard sometimes?
Yes, yeah. It's just especially when some of them aren't doing so well, like him right now. But it's definitely worth it.
We thought we understood suffering. We've seen our share of it during the past 5 years, but then we took a walk the other day, a walk around a house where the most noticeable sounds are the gasping of air and the cries of pain. We thought we understood commitment and sacrifice, but then we took a walk the other day, to the therapy room, to the dining room, to a wall full of pictures of those children currently living here, and then to another wall full of pictures of children I can't find the words to describe, those children who now reside in the loving arms of our Heavenly Father.
One of the things that God has shown us is that we can't save everyone. Sometimes we're here to save lives. Sometimes we're here to simply love those children and carry them to the arms of Jesus. And then when they are gone, to mourn them, because every child deserves to be mourned and every child deserves to be remembered.
And they will be remembered. Every time Daryl walks down this road to the town cemetery, every time he walks up this little hill to where those precious little ones are buried, they will be remembered. As well, these days we've been allowed to live in Guatemala among people like Daryl Fulp. We've met so many of them during the past 2 years since we started doing Stories from the Heart. The hearts of people who have taught us so much about so many things, like God's love for all of us.
Actually, through all of this, we believe that God wants to show each of us how he sees us, that we're all children with special needs, that he has adopted, and that he loves deeply as his treasures.
We certainly treasure you, our family and friends here at The Crossing, who have supported us for the past 5 years with your giving, your encouragement, and certainly with your prayers. We thought we couldn't possibly appreciate the sacrifices you've made for us any more than we already have. We thought we couldn't possibly have our hearts broken any more than we've already have. We thought we couldn't possibly be touched by God's grace and forgiveness than we already have. And then we took a walk the other day.
When Jesus is more to your heart, you go and you serve and you love the unlovely and you care about people on the margins of our society. I tell whoever cares that I am going to go over. Our staff, I'm going to go over about 5 minutes, so everybody calm down and we'll make it, all right? We'll figure it out in the break because I got more and I'm not stopping. All right, so I want to show you something. I want to show you something. It's a picture by a guy named George Seurat. He invented something in the 1800s called pointillism, and it's a type of art. And so we're going to focus on one part of that picture, and we're going to see as we go through this series of pictures that as you get closer and closer, the reason it's called pointillism is because what this painting, this very famous painting was just a lot of tiny little dots, a lot of tiny little dots that all completed ended up in this beautiful picture, this famous picture you'd see in an art gallery, right? And for some reason, that helps me think about all of our role here in this mission that Jesus is more. Because when you go to a church like The Crossing, it is big, and there's this temptation to think that your giving doesn't matter because it's so small in comparison to the need or in comparison to what somebody else gives, or it's easy to think that your serving doesn't matter because it seems so small and insignificant at the moment. I mean, imagine if you walked in and George Seurat were painting and you just saw a bunch of dots and you're like, well, what's the point? It took him 2 years to do it. So there's plenty of time to go, is this going anywhere? But he had this vision in his mind of what it would end up being. Now, we don't get to have that vision in our mind because that's God's plan. And God's painting something here. And we don't know what it is, but I do know this. Everything you do, everything you give matters. Okay, here we go. Mason Mislan. in his buddy's picture, I think, here, is in a mirror. They are leading a small group of guys. They start out in fifth grade. They're in sixth grade, I think, now maybe going into seventh grade even. But Mason finds, I know it's not a great picture, but it's the best we can do. Mason is a college student in a mirror. They're college students, and they find out that one of the kid's dads, this is when the kid's in fifth grade, they find out that the kid's grandfather's died. So they just take time to type him up a letter and send it to him. And just compassion for his dad, or for compassion for his grandfather had died, knowing that they were praying for him. So here's the mom, Jeff, who's the kid. Here's what his mom said. She said, Jeff said that note made him feel like Mason really cared about him. As a mom, that's priceless to know. My son has someone outside his home that really cares so much. Thank you for everything the crossing does for my kids. I tell you what, when you're at a place, when you're at a church that college students are investing time in relationship in fifth and sixth and seventh and eighth graders, you're at a special place. Something special. God is doing something special. Or here's a picture of my friend Doug. And Doug is, we call him the baby whisperer. It's not a very good picture. Just a mom took a picture of this because she wrote in and said, we come from a very diverse family. My two-year-old wouldn't go to any place, scream, throw a fit. And Doug can make friends with any two-year-old you've ever met. And she took a picture stunned. Now, I bet you when Mason wrote that letter to that fifth grade boy, it's like, well, this is no big deal. I bet you're going to look at that and go, well, what's the big deal? He's just walking a kid down the hall. It's just a point. It's just a dot. I mean, does it really matter? Oh, but you don't know what God's doing. You don't know the picture he's painting. In that fifth grader's life or in that family's life. My friends Tom and Robin, their son Matt, diagnosed with leukemia earlier this year. Incredibly difficult journey to walk down. And Tom said a couple weeks ago, he said, people show up at my door with food. I don't even know who they are. They just show up with food. Well, here's who some of them are. Not all of them, I'm sure, but some of them are the Crossing Meals team, the food team. They're just in there making meals that then get taken to this family who are in the midst of suffering and struggle, who can't barely keep their emotional life together, their job life together, and now they don't have to worry about food. And they feel loved and cared for. As they walk through dark valley, they know they're not alone. Why? Because there's people who just put a little dot. I mean, you're just making a casserole. Does it matter? Is it really that big of a deal? Oh, yeah, it is, because you don't know the picture that God is painting. The Israeli army, they compel everyone to serve for 2 years. They're compelled by law to serve in the army. We do not compel by law, but instead we compel by the love of Jesus. Not compelled by law, but compelled by love. So Christine and our four kids, we give and we serve here. And I don't have any problem asking you to join us and to join the hundreds and thousands of people who are giving and serving here at the Crossing. I've got no problem asking you to give and serve generously with your time, because if it weren't for giving and serving, we wouldn't have a counselor like Pat who could sit in a room and help a family put a marriage together. We wouldn't have a student ministry that would invest in college students, who invest in grade school students. If it wasn't for your giving and your serving, we wouldn't have families who can bring their kids, and their kids love it. And they say, let's go back. We wouldn't have a student ministry staff so that a sixth grader can take an hour bus ride and read her devotional every morning. I don't have any problem asking you to give and serve and say, we need you in the game, because this is the truth. Jesus is more. We got nothing else here but Jesus, but we need nothing else other than him. He is changing our lives. He is changing our communities, changing our world. Amen.